The cabin of the Confederate's transport was mostly dark, except for soft red emergency lights. I found an empty seat near the back of the transport. Then, the transport lifted straight up in the air. The inside of the kettle was anything but luxurious. The walls, ceiling, and floor were bare, unadorned metal. In a transport like this, passengers were nothing more than cargo. There were no windows and no way of knowing what was happening outside of the ship. Bat Wingate and his commando escort sat somewhere in the front of the kettle. I could not see them. It did not matter. I knew they were inside, and besides, there was only one way off this bird. I looked at my watch. Just under 4 minutes had passed since the bombardment began. By my best guess, the GCF ships had been in the area for 6 minutes and would broadcast out in another two. A missile slammed into our shields. In times of danger, I had the Liberator combat reflex that flooded my blood with a hormone made of adrenaline and endorphins. A warm, comfortable feeling spread through my body, a sense of power and mental clarity. I was not in control of the situation, yet the hormone made me feel as if I were. And then the ride was over. We lowered into a landing pad inside some GCF ship. The heavy iron doors of the transport slid open and the hangar bay came in view. I got up and pushed through the crowd, walking out of the transport and hiding near the door. The landing bay was disorganized. Of course, the battle was still going on when the transport landed on a Confederate ship, but that did not explain all of the chaos. This was supposed to be a military operation. As the rear door of the kettle split open, revealing the deck, I saw cargo movers driving large crates through a confused crowd. On the Kamehameha, every wall was polished and every light fixture dusted. On this ship, bunches of black and red cables hung from the walls like bunting. Branches from these cables snaked along the ceiling.
Okay, let's get this ship unloaded.
By the informal command, I realized just how devoid of military leadership the Confederates must be. With very few notable exceptions, every officer that graduated from the military academies was Earth-born and Earth-loyal. It had always been so. The only officers the Confederate arms and MOGATs would have were likely book-trained with no battle experience. They had a few notable defectors, like Crowley and Halverson, but those officers would be too busy running the battles to work with the rank and file. The men on the transport unloaded the crates. They mobbed boxes that were light enough to be lifted and trotted down to the deck, stacking them in marked areas. I joined the hubbub at the base of the ramp and watched for Colonel Wingate. Now that we were on a GCF ship, Wingate was just a small fish, but he was connected. He would lead me to the men in charge. The pack of men around me thinned and disappeared, and still Wingate did not leave the transport. The men in lifters skittered back and forth up the ramp until their work was done, and still Wingate remained on the ship. Soon I was alone in the landing bay, hiding near the open transport. I could not remain on the deck much longer without someone spotting me.
Prepare for broadcast. Prepare for broadcast in 10, 9, 8.
I looked at the transport. Wingate had to have boarded this ship. He would not have remained on the planet. It was entirely possible that the commandos killed him and left his body in the woods to cover their tracks. But why go to such lengths?
7, 6, 5, 4, 3.
The ship would self-broadcast any moment, and, of course, images of Admiral Kleiber's pale corpse ran through my mind. I had a brief moment of uncertainty. Then I sprinted up the ramp and into the dark belly of the transport. The kettle was completely empty. Harnesses hung from the ceiling, with its ring of hard benches and metal walls dully reflecting the non-glare amber light. The kettle looked like the inside of a kiln.
2, 1, broadcast initiated.
Wingate had to be on this transport. He was not in the kettle, so he had to be up near the cockpit.
It was a total and complete shutout. They're guessing 20, maybe 25 UA ships and as many as 500 fighters.
500?
They had 420 at Bolivar Air Base.
I did not see the man speaking, though it was probably Wingate. So, the traitor now was in the cockpit, chatting with the pilots, getting a blow-by-blow account of the battle.
Now, they had a carrier guarding the discs. That was another 70 fighters. So that makes 490 fighters.
How many of their ships were carriers?
I'd say all of them if I had to guess.
Broadcast complete.
The rear door of the small transport slid closed behind me.
All fighter carriers carry 70 fighters?
They're supposed to. There's a ship in the Scutum Crux fleet that has nothing but seals and transports.
Now that the broadcast was complete, the transport could shuttle between ships. I felt the tremble of the ship as the hull lifted off the deck.
I heard about that one. I heard all those seals are clones. Special clones. Real dangerous.
This was undoubtedly the voice of a commando. Probably one of the men that pulled Wingate out of Fort Clinton.
I wouldn't know. That was a Navy project. All of the Rangers and Special Forces men I commanded were natural born.
I did not know if we would fly to another ship or land on a planet. Wherever we were, it was deep in Confederate territory.
So if there were 70 fighters on each of the ships we caught coming out of the network, and we caught 25 of them, that would mean that we got 1,750 fighters.
That voice belonged to the other commando.
Man, I'd hate to be the guy who has to report those losses to the Joint Chiefs.
And we didn't lose a single ship?
Not a one.
How about the planet?
I haven't heard anything. You get the best info on stuff like that from the Media Link anyway. They'll have reporters down on the planet, assuming there's any planet left.
We were coming in for our landing. Hiding there in the rear of the transport, I realized that I was still dressed in camouflage gear and needed a change of clothing. No use taking either of the two commandos. They were probably dressed like me, in UA Army fatigues. I needed to dress like a crewman, not a soldier. The thick metal doors of the kettle split open. I could see a quiet landing pad outside. The area was brightly lit. The ground was paved with black asphalt. There were no boxes or people, and no clues about where we might have landed.
Come on. Atkins and Crowley both asked to see you.
Amos Crowley was the army general who had defected to the Mogats. Atkins would likely be Warren Atkins, the son of the founder of the Morgan Atkins movement. That would make this a Mogat base or a command ship. I hid myself in some cargo netting as the men came out of the cockpit. Wingate and the two commandos tromped down the metal ramp. I caught a brief glimpse of their backs as they reached the end of the ramp. Wingate was short and normal in every regard compared to the tall, athletic-looking men on either side of him. I wrestled my way out from behind the cargo nets. There was still a pilot in the cockpit of the transport. Moving slowly, I stalked across the cabin, hiding behind the ribbings in the wall. I got to the entrance of the cockpit and peered in. A lone man sat at the controls. He had a data pad on his lap. A lone worker in white overalls, the uniform of a civilian mechanic, came walking across the deck. He walked right past me, no more than 3 feet from my face.
I hear it was some battle.
I only saw it for a second, but what I saw was wild.
Did you fly into it?
Killing two men without causing a stir was out of the question. I eased out of my hiding place and quietly crossed the deck. I breezed toward the open doorway. There, I stopped. Standing at the top of the ramp was a boy who could not yet have been in his 20s. He wore white overalls and a white hard hat. The boy looked strong. The zipper of his jumper was down to his chest.
Do you know where Fred... Hey, who are you?
I slammed the edge of my hand hard across his throat. I slung him sideways into the heavy cargo netting. Then, as he tried to wrestle free of the netting, I finished the boy by slamming the heel of my hand into the side of his neck. A moment later, a nearly naked boy lay tucked under a mess of cargo netting. No one would find him for a while. At least, not until the next time somebody loaded cargo onto this transport. I had no plan. Here I was, on an enemy ship, probably in the center of the enemy fleet, and I was not sure what to do next. I did not make it off the transport in time to tail Wingate. I did not have a prayer of sabotaging the fleet, or even this ship. Escape seemed out of the question. My best bet would be to find a way onto the bridge of the ship and learn the fleet's galactic coordinates. If I could locate that information and broadcast it to Huang, the UA Navy could come after the bastards. After what I saw on New Columbia, I liked the idea of UA ships having a fair fight. Looking around the landing area, I stared into the ivory horizon where the runway met the walls. Cavernous and square, this hangar was designed for transports and cargo ships, not fighters. With the exception of Harriers, which had a vertical takeoff, fighters took off in runway tubes, allowing them to build up speed before entering battles. I found a pair of Media Link shades inside one of the waist-lined pockets of the overalls. I checked the three small pores at the base of each of the eyepieces to make sure that the microphones were clear. When I reached the door of the hangar, I stopped to look back. There sat the transport, alone in the center of the brightly lit landing pad. What about Fred the chatty mechanic and his friend the pilot? Would they discover the little surprise I had wrapped up in the cargo bay? They might, but that could not be helped. Sooner or later, somebody would spot the body, no matter where I hid it. The hall outside the hangar seemed to stretch the entire length of the ship. The polished gray floor went on as far as the eye could see. This was a major corridor, a squared tube with 20-foot walls. Clumps of people moved through it, but it was far from crowded. Compared to the bustling walkways of most UA ships, this corridor was deserted. Enough time had passed since Wingate left the transport that I had not a prayer of catching up to him. In my mind, Wingate had become a low priority at this point. He had led me to the enemy fleet. But even capturing Crowley and Atkins seemed unimportant at the moment. What would I do with them this deep in enemy territory? Navy crews had a practice called hot bunking. It meant that three men slept in the same rack, obviously not at the same time. They had 8-hour shifts, work 8 hours, recreate 8 hours, sleep 8 hours. Hot bunking caused problems for saboteurs like myself because it meant that the ship never slept. There would always be men at the helm and in the engine rooms, so what could I accomplish? I toyed with the idea of slipping a cable into the broadcast engines, but I did not feel like committing suicide. Feeling like I needed a better disguise than these coveralls, I followed the hall toward the center of the ship. Old as this ship was, it was still of a unified authority design. The basics were the basics. I knew that the landing bay would be on the bottom deck, and that I would have to go to another deck to find what I wanted, a gym. 15 minutes and 2 decks later, I found one. Training did not appeal to these sailors by the look of things. The locker room was nearly empty. I heard someone in the shower. A moment later, a blubbery man with white skin turned the color of rare roast beef stepped out of a steam room. The man did not have a towel. Drops of water splashed from his flabby legs as he walked. I grabbed shorts and a shirt from a shelf and tossed my coveralls into a locker. A moment later, I walked out to exercise, the Media Link shades hidden in my pocket. And things continued to go my way. There was only one other person working out. He did not look at me as I climbed on a stationary bike, dropped the shades over my eyes, and began pedaling. What I needed to do next was contact Huang or Freeman. But with another person in the room, I did not want to hold a conversation. In this case, I went the old-fashioned route and composed letters, customizing a form letter by choosing words and phrases from a menu and optically typing words when needed. Optical typing was a slow process. I selected an urgent document. The default letter that appeared was a request for financial assistance, but every word was interactive, and as I changed words at the front of the letter, the rest of the document composed itself.
Ray, I have stowed away on a GCF ship. I believe Warren Atkins and Amos Crowley are on this ship. Contact Huang and let him know that I will transmit the location of this ship as soon as I have it. I will call when it is safe. Harris.
I mailed the letter, then went back to the locker room. In the locker room, I stripped for a shower. The goal now was to remain inconspicuous as I killed time and waited for the right change of clothing. I needed something I could wear on the upper decks without attracting attention. So, I went in the shower room and soaped and showered, peering out whenever I heard people entering or leaving the locker room. More than an hour passed before the man I was waiting for arrived, and I counted myself lucky that he had come so soon. When he left the locker room, I rinsed myself off. When I looked out of the shower, I saw a crewman walking around the floor picking up a few sopping towels that had been discarded and tossing them into the laundry cart. Drying myself off as quickly as possible, I pulled on a fresh pair of gym shorts and a t-shirt. Stepping out into the corridor, I saw the crewman moving slowly away. He stood hunched over the laundry cart, his head turning to follow everyone he passed. He turned down one hall and then another before reaching his final destination. Capital ships had more than one laundry facility. Chances were, there was a special facility on the upper decks just for cleaning officers' uniforms, but this laundry would do. I approached and the door slid open.
What do you want?
My clothes. You hauled off my uniform in one of your laundry carts.
Sorry,
The man went back to sorting dirty clothes and did not look back in my direction. I had at least 30 carts to choose from. In the third cart, I found an officer's work uniform. I went to the emptiest room on any battleship, the chapel. There I could speak freely.
Who is Derek Hines?
Freeman's face appeared on my media link shades.
Never heard of him.
You're using his link address.
Oh, him. He was a crewman on a GCF ship.
Confederate or MOGAT?
No idea. I think it's their flagship.
Well, how did you get on?
I followed Colonel Wingate, the commander of Fort Clinton.
That was the army base that got destroyed in New Columbia. What's he doing on a GCF ship?
He swapped sides. Turns out he was using Fort Clinton as a surplus outlet and the MOGATs were his favorite customers. Think he's worth much?
He's worth something. The MOGATs routed the Navy at New Columbia. They shot down 23 UA ships and destroyed all three military bases. The pundits are saying that Washington is desperate. Have you got a location on the fleet?
No, Ray, this is too big for us. We're going to need to bring Huang in on it. Keep this channel open. I don't know how I'm going to do it yet, but I will get you a location. Once I have something, you're going to have to turn it over to Huang.
Will do.
Where are you now?
I was on my way to Little Man.
Your family okay?
The carrier buzzed them last night. I think it scared them. They're colonists. Having the Navy around makes them nervous.
Did anything happen?
The captain gave them 1 month to evacuate the planet. They'll still be there when this is over with.
We agreed to meet in safe harbor once I got off this ship. Freeman would go and see what happened to Callahan and the commandant at Fort Washington. One way or another, I was going to bring in Bat Wingate, and we would need witnesses to prove he was our Benedict Arnold. My new uniform made me a lieutenant in the Confederate Navy. Now that I was an officer, I moved around the ship more freely. I walked the halls and looked for clues. This ship had a skeleton crew, maybe a half crew. I walked down major arteries between engineering and weapons systems, passing only an occasional sailor. The ship itself was clean, brightly lit, and remarkably unorganized. The cables that I saw lining the walls down in the landing bay also snaked along the halls on the upper decks. They were about 3 inches in diameter and highly insulated, which led me to believe that they might carry a high-voltage electrical charge. My first discovery was that this ship was a battleship. I found that out when I passed a directory on the top deck. The directory showed the ship's 7 decks, plus a picture of the ship from the outside. A ship of this size should have had a 2,500-man crew. Now, having walked its length on every deck, I guessed the crew at no more than 800. Maybe 1/10 of the crew was Japanese. The engineering area was almost all Japanese. The Japanese officers made no attempt to fit in with the other sailors that I saw. Most of the men on this battleship wore tan-colored uniforms. The Japanese uniforms were dark blue. The closer I came to the command deck, the more this ship looked Japanese. Not far from the directory, on the command deck, stood an archway made of 2 posts topped by 2 beams. Under the arch was a shrine, or display, with 3 long swords stretched across a 3-tiered pedestal. Since the officers I saw walk past this shrine did not stop to bow or pray to it, I decided the display had more to do with heritage than religion. I continued toward the bridge. Here I walked with a businesslike stride, acting as if I had an important meeting to attend. I turned a corner and saw the entry to the bridge. The bridge was spacious and dark. Teams of sailors gathered around various consoles and workstations. Everyone in the room was Japanese. In the dimmed light, their royal blue uniforms were black as shadows, even in the low glow from the workstations. Looking around the floor, I estimated that there were at least 50 officers sitting at the various stations. In the center of the bridge sat a large square table, which the captain and his senior officers used to chart courses and consider battle strategies. There was nothing else to do. The workstations were arranged in concentric circles. Walking quickly past them without a pause, I recognized each station. The computers in the weapons area, which were unmanned at the moment, had large displays showing the diagram of the battleship with its gun and cannon arrays highlighted. The engineering station had computers showing detailed maps of each deck. 3 men sat in front of 1 elongated screen in the navigation section. Their screen had a map of the galaxy along the top, but most of the screen was filled with the local star system. I did not recognize the system. The last area I passed as I lapped the outer circle of the bridge was communications. This particular station was more cluttered than the worst workstation in the Golan traffic tower. stack of data pads had toppled, spreading across the desk. Pencils, pens, papers, coffee cups, and other bric-a-brac lay all around those pads. There were 4 cups of coffee along the edge of that particular desk, along with a brick-sized box of audio chips. In the center of this mess was a large ashtray filled to capacity with cigarette ash and butts. The line of drawers along the left side of the station hung partially open. The drawers, like everything else at this station, overflowed with junk. I passed by the station without slowing, completed my lap of the bridge, and left. Not far from the bridge, I found a bathroom. A couple of men stood by the urinals, so I entered a stall and waited until they left. Then I contacted Freeman.
Okay, this is a battleship. I have no idea where we are. I'm going to leave this line open. Tell Huang to have his intel section listen in.
Freeman nodded. Removing the shades, I stepped out of the bathroom stall and returned to the bridge. I took another stroll on the bridge, slowing to glance at the various workstations as I passed them. I wished I could examine the strategic charts. As before, nobody paid any attention to me. I approached the communications area and looked over my shoulder to be sure that no one was watching. I never stopped, but I slowed down as I left a little extra mess on the already cluttered workstation. A moment later, I left the command deck and never returned. I returned to the gym locker room. It was empty. The coveralls were still in the locker where I had placed them. Weeks might have passed before somebody discovered them in a forsaken gym like this one. I pulled them from the locker, stepped into the pants legs, and zipped them up. I headed down to the landing bay. The last corridor that led there was entirely empty. Everything was going so smoothly. I had no doubt that I would slip off the ship soon. The next time I saw people was as I drew near the landing bay. 2 men walked down an intersecting corridor. They wore the khaki uniforms of regular officers rather than the blue uniforms of the Japanese, and they fell in quietly behind me as I continued toward the bay. I expected them to turn into some door or another, but they did not. They continued straight ahead, walking at the same pace as me. With no other choice, I entered the landing area. A lone transport sat in the middle of the hangar, its hatch hung open. A small crowd stood on the ramp leading into the kettle. I counted 3 medics and 6 MPs, and in the center of them, placed on the bare metal ramp like a cadaver on a mortuary slab, lay Derek Hines, stripped down to his briefs. The muzzle of a gun jabbed into my back.
How do you like that, boys? We have our first prisoner.
If there was one kind of naval design that did not change with the times, it was the brig. I once ran security for the Doctrinaire, the most advanced ship ever made. I knew every cell in its brig thoroughly, and they were exactly like the cells in this ancient ship, the one in which I was now a prisoner. Both brigs had the same kinds of bars on their walls and the same limp mats on their cots. I did not have the means to measure my floor, but if I did, it would have measured precisely 8 by 12 feet. Had the brig been darker, I might have slept. The lights in the hall were too bright. Forced to guess how long I had been in this cell, I might have said 3 hours. It could have been longer. It could have been shorter. With no sun coming up and no events by which to gauge time, my internal clock was all but useless. My jailers looked in on me through the bars. Both men wore khaki uniforms. One was a tall man with blonde hair. The other had dark brown locks.
Hello, Harris. Comfortable?
Hope you didn't go to too much trouble getting my name. I would have told you if you'd asked.
Really? I always heard that Liberator clones were tougher than that. You knew you were a clone, right? I mean, I would hate for you to have one of those death reflex things and keel over right here.
Don't worry about it.
So, you're a Liberator. Always thought your kind would be bigger. I mean, aren't you guys the planet exterminators?
You must be a Mogat.
The term is Morgan Atkins Believer. I suggest you remember that, Harris, or your stay here could become real unpleasant.
Now that I stopped to look, I saw that this was not a man to take lightly. He had a broad and powerful build. His bull neck was almost as wide as his jaw, making it look like he had a pointed head. The muscles in his shoulders bulged, but this was not the beautiful physique of a bodybuilder. This man had padding around his gut.
Learn anything else?
The second man outside my cell, a short, chubby man with brown hair, stepped forward with a data pad.
Harris Wason, Colonel, Unified Authority Marines, Raise UA Orphanage number 553. Year of Manufacture 2490. Clone class, Liberator. How does a clone, especially a Liberator clone, achieve the rank of Colonel?
You want to know how I became a Colonel?
I want to know why you exist at all. How did you find your way on this ship?
Do you want the full story or the abbreviated version?
Let's stick with the short one for now.
I caught a ride on your transport when it left New Columbia.
Know what, Harris? I believe you. An honest clone, no less.
May I ask a question?
Go ahead.
Is this ship part of the Hino Day fleet, or part of the Confederate Navy, or part of the Galactic Central Fleet?
None of your business.
Confederate Navy.
It depends who you ask, I suppose.
So what is the Hino Day fleet?
Another name for the same bunch of ships.
Do you have more than one fleet?
No.
Shut up.
He's in jail, Sam, and he's down to his skivvies. How is he going to tell anyone? We will ask the questions from here on out, Harris. We have not decided what to do with you yet. I suggest you conduct yourself properly. Execution is not out of the question.
They left me in my cell, with nothing to do and no way of knowing how much time passed. I laid on the cot in my underwear, staring at the ceiling, and tried to piece together all of the little fragments of information I had collected. It seemed like the Separatists had a genuine power struggle on their hands. They had an alliance, but all three sides were claiming the Navy for themselves. Why did the Japanese officers wear different uniforms than the other men? Did the Mogats consider themselves part of the Confederate arms? Did the Japanese?
I knew it was you the moment I heard they had a prisoner.
Smiling Tom Halverson, my nickname for him, stood outside my cell looking dapper in his dress whites, with the three gold stripes of a full admiral on his shoulder boards.
Hello, Harris.
Get specked.
Watch yourself, clone.
Whenever people visited me, Sam, my blonde-haired jailer, accompanied them.
That's all right, Sergeant. Colonel Harris and I are old acquaintances. Is that why you're here, Harris? Did you come for me? No comment, Harris? That doesn't sound good.
The Admiral asked you a question.
That's all right, Sergeant. You know, Harris, you really are amazing. The rest of them can't even locate our ships, and you turn up on one of them. It's a good thing the Unified Authority doesn't have 100 more of you. Of course, if they want to win the war, they can make more of you. But then I get the feeling that all you want is a little revenge.
Why did you kill him? You and Kleiber were friends.
I should have thought that was obvious, Harris. He's with the Unified Authority. I defected to the Confederate arms. We were on different sides.
Get specked.
I brought you a present, Harris. You can break these if you want, but I went to a lot of trouble to get them for you, so don't expect me to replace them if you do.
Halverson tossed a pair of Media Link shades in through the bars.
Bryce said you like to keep up with current events. There should be some dandy news for you to follow over the next few weeks. And don't bother trying to send messages out on those. I had the sending gear disabled.
You were stupid. Killing Admiral Kleiber was a stupid mistake.
Why is that, Colonel?
Huang already planned to replace him with...
With Robert Thurston, no doubt.
Sam, who remained just outside the bars of my cell, continued to stare at me with those narrow green eyes that looked both alert and angry.
If you break the lenses, they'd make real sharp blades. You might be able to save us some trouble and slit your own throat with them. I'd like that.
I picked them up and turned them over in my hands to examine them from every angle. The strip along the bottom of the lenses with the microphones had been removed. When I slipped the shades over my eyes and jacked in, I saw that they had been hobbled so that the sending functions no longer worked. The browsing functions worked well, however. We were somewhere in the Norma arm. Not only could I browse the Unified Authority-approved channels, I also found local broadcasts that were banned and filtered out of the UA media. Calendars were everywhere on the link, and I knew that it was now March 26th. 11 days had passed since Bryce Kleiber's death. 36 hours had passed since the attack on New Columbia. The big story on the UA feeds was the unveiling of the Doctrinaire. Admiral Huang, now officially the highest-ranking man in the Navy after Kleiber's death, could not have been any better suited for the role of tour guide. Huang escorted a large group of reporters on a tour of the Doctrinaire. He charmed them with his enthusiasm as he led them into battle turret after battle turret, then showed them the observation deck from which they could view the rest of the ship. Huang did not reveal classified secrets like the dual broadcast generators, but he highlighted many of the obvious innovations. No reporter could possibly have missed the four launch tubes that ran the length of the hull of the Doctrinaire, so Huang talked about the fighter squadrons at length. As Huang finished speaking, he was joined by the other Joint Chiefs and several senators. He opened the floor for questions, and every hand shot up. Reporters clambered for his attention until he finally selected a man near the front of the audience.
This is unquestionably an amazing ship, but it is still just one ship. How can it possibly fare against an attack force like the 65 ships that sacked New Columbia?
Excellent question. We have arranged a demonstration to address that very point. If you are not satisfied after our demonstration, we can discuss it further.
Can a ship this size self-broadcast reliably?
I think Admiral Kleiber struggled a long time with that question. The engines on this ship are perfectly reliable. We have tested them thoroughly.
Didn't Admiral Kleiber die in a broadcast malfunction?
An unfortunate irony, if you like. The broadcast equipment in this ship is completely stable.
Huang selected his next inquisitor.
Admiral Kleiber was going to command this ship, was he not? Who will command it in his place?
Admiral Kleiber never intended to command this ship. He was a fleet admiral, you know. You don't assign a fleet admiral to a single ship. Rear Admiral Robert Thurston was selected to command the Doctrinaire, while Kleiber commanded the entire fleet.
Rear Admiral Thurston? The commander of the Scutum Crux fleet?
Yes. As you may recall, he commanded our forces to victory at Hubble and Little Man.
The questions continued for 10 more minutes. The session would have gone on for hours had Huang allowed it, but he had promised a final demonstration.
Ladies and gentlemen, I suggest you prepare yourselves. We are about to enter a war zone.
Smoky-colored tinting appeared in the glass ceilings and walls of the observation deck, turning them opaque. They saw the muted flashes of lightning all around them. When the lightning stopped and the tinting cleared, the Doctrinaire was in a battle zone. Looking around the crown of the observation deck, you could see dozens of ships buzzing around it.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Cygnus Arm. In case it has slipped your attention, this is one of the Confederate arms. We are 40,000 light years deep in enemy territory. What you see flying outside our shields are 25 ships from what we in the Navy call the Mothball Fleet. These are vintage ships. These are battleships from 2488 and newer. They are fully functional, space-worthy ships. They were perfectly preserved for just such an occasion as this.
Who is flying them?
Not to worry. They are not being manned by live crews.
Zipping around, weaving in and out and around each other, the old battleships circled around the Doctrinaire from 2 miles off.
Before we begin our actual battle, you should know that the ships around us are using live ammunition. Rear Admiral Thurston, would you direct one of those battleships to attack?
One of the battleships charged straight at the Doctrinaire and fired. It shot a brilliant burst of bright red laser fire, followed by 3 torpedoes. The translucent shields turned milky white where the beam hit. Moments later, the 3 torpedoes slammed into the shields and burst into puddles of light that dissolved quickly in the vacuum of space.
As I stated before, the attacking ships are decommissioned UA Navy ships. We stopped using these 15 years ago because their technology was obsolete, surpassed by technologies which are now also considered obsolete. These ships were made 20 years after the ships currently used by the Confederate arms. Let the battle begin. Admiral Kleiber spared nothing when he designed this ship. He wanted to make the ship that would end the war. A ship that would terrify enemies into abandoning their revolution.
Above Huang's head, the vacuum of space looked like a thunderstorm. Hundreds of torpedoes pecked at the shields from every angle.
I think it's time we teach these marauders a lesson. Admiral Thurston, return fire.
Laser bursts fired from the side of the Doctrinaire. The bursts traveled at the speed of light. The time that it took for the laser bursts to pass through the shields was so short that they could not be measured by any instrument. Out in the blackness that engulfed the observation deck, enemy ships exploded. The computer-controlled targeting system on the Doctrinaire wasted few shots. Lasers burst in all directions. Many of the ships in the attacking fleet were hit 2 and 3 times. The last of the attacking ships, nearly disintegrated in the laser fire from multiple cannons. The ship continued to glide toward the shields. Huang looked at his watch and smiled.
2 minutes and 23 seconds. Not quite the time I hoped for, but not far off pace.
Huang looked up at the derelict battleship that now hurtled toward the Doctrinaire.
This is a lucky break. Robert, let that ship fly into our shields.
The battleship tumbled into the shields and stopped instantly. The shields held that battered hull in place, infusing it with an electrical charge. After a few moments, the charge repulsed the dead ship, and it floated away from the Doctrinaire.
The enemy is using the Galactic Central Fleet, a fleet of UA Navy ships that vanished more than 40 years ago. It is an incomplete fleet. It has no fighter craft. A fleet without fighters, gentlemen, is like a boxer without a jab. In order to strike, the enemy will be forced to use battleships. And battleships, ladies and gentlemen, big and slow ships that are hard to maneuver, make great targets. Great targets. The Confederate Navy is perfect for bushwhacking helpless carriers as they emerge from the broadcast network. It will be useless against a giant ship that hits the deck running.
I lay on my cot, thinking about the demonstration I had just seen. What would Warren Atkins make of it? What would Amos Crowley, the general-turned-traitor, think? Would Colonel Wingate regret switching sides? Wingate could not possibly have known about the Doctrinaire. Would he try to weasel his way back into the UA Army? What could Admiral Halverson possibly say to the men around him to give them hope? No one bothered to interrogate me. In fact, after the visit from Halverson, I was pretty much left alone. My jailers suddenly remembered me the following day, March 27th, 2512. That was the day that the tides of war turned. Sam the jailer came in.
You might want to put on the shades Admiral Halverson gave you. We're about to attack another planet. It's time to show those UA speckers what we think of their big, scary boat.
I slipped on my shades. Regular programming had been preempted. In a moment, the station would show a live newsflash.
How long has the attack been going?
Just began.
The heading at the bottom of the screen read, Tuscany, Sagittarius Arm. The live feed was shot from the planet's surface and told me nothing. There was none of the destruction that I had seen on New Columbia. People gathered along the streets and stared into the sky to watch tiny flashes of light, a distant naval battle that blended in all too well with the stars around it.
Just moments ago, a fleet of 15 Confederate Navy ships broadcasted into Tuscany space and were intercepted by a fleet of nearly 50 UA ships. It is not known if the Doctrinaire, the Unified Authority's supership, joined this battle.
The reporter was a young woman with long brown hair wearing a pretty light blue suit. Above and behind her, little lights twinkled and extinguished. They might have been fireflies or stars on a very clear night. The woman paused and touched her finger to her ear. Then the screen split into two side-by-side windows.
Paula, we are receiving the first still images of the battle as it appears from space. These are early images released by the Department of the Navy.
Behind the anchorwoman's desk, a large screen showed pictures of a space battle. The first picture on the screen showed ships broadcasting in. The ships were black and would have been almost invisible if not for the bright lightning halos that formed around them.
As you can see, at 2215 standardized time, 15 Confederate ships appeared in New Tuscan space.
The next picture showed swarms of fighters gathering around shadowy shapes that looked something like black holes.
According to naval sources, 350 UA fighters engaged the enemy ships, destroying two battleships. UA battleships, cruisers, and missile carriers also joined the battle.
The next picture showed four ships taking heavy damage. In the background, I saw the flare of rocket engines. While their comrades burned, several Confederate ships tried to cut and run. They had no choice.
There are unconfirmed reports that naval intelligence knew about this attack in advance and that Navy spies have infiltrated enemy command. The Department of the Navy denies those reports. We do know that the Navy was ready for this attack.
The news anchor touched a finger to her ear.
I have just received a report that a total of 6 enemy ships have been destroyed and that 9 others managed to broadcast out safely. While Pentagon sources confirm that several single-man fighter craft were destroyed in the battle, the UA Navy lost no capital ships.
Company, Harris.
Then Sam's fist slammed into my stomach. Sam's boot slammed into my jaw. After that, everything went black. When I woke, I lay dressed in my briefs in what appeared to be an operating room. My neck, shoulders, wrists, waist, and ankles were all strapped to the hard, cold surface of a table. There was a strap across my forehead, but this one was loose enough for me to lift my head an inch. A bright light shined on my face from above. Its glare gave the skin on my arms a bleached look. Beyond the veil of the light, I could not see much of anything.
I am sorry I could not visit you sooner.
A squat silhouette appeared at the edge of the light. The man stepped closer. Yoshi Yamashiro, the former governor of Ezra Cree, stood beside the table.
I guess Tuscany didn't go the way you expected.
I guess not.
And you think I had something to do with it?
You make an excellent suspect. Obviously, you could not have done it alone. Your being a liberator has caused quite a stir between three uneasy partners. The Morgan Atkins believers consider you a devil. They claim to respect all life forms, but when it comes to liberator clones, they make an exception. They want you exterminated immediately. Sam, your jailer, is a Morgan Atkins believer. He has offered to kill you himself.
Oh, he damn near did.
The believers are not military-minded. They are politically savvy. The military minds come from the Confederate arms. They say we should torture you, find out how you learned of our plans, and what else you might know. After they get what they want, they plan to execute you.
How about you?
After we win this war, I think you should go free, provided you explain a few things.
How I boarded this ship?
We know all about that. You killed Corporal Jamie Rogers outside a safe harbor while he was patrolling in the woods. You were alone, and you took his place on the lift that brought his platoon back to the fleet. We know you killed Rogers because he did not report after the mission. We know you were alone because we took a headcount on the ship.
I did not know his name.
We've been able to trace your movements on this ship. You killed Private Derek Hines for his clothing. Once you had it, you went to a gymnasium on the second deck. Then you went to a laundry facility and stole a uniform belonging to Lieutenant Marcus Cox. We even have a security feed of you on the command deck. You strode around the bridge twice. A few minutes later, you were captured back in the landing bay. Presumably you were looking for a way off the ship? Does that sound correct?
More or less.
How did you know we would attack Tuscany?
I didn't.
Did you hear people discussing it?
Maybe the Unified Authority has a spy on this ship. I came here for revenge, not information.
There is no one else on this ship. There are no spies on this ship. Well, other than you.
General Crowley.
Governor Yamashiro, I was not aware that you knew Colonel Harris.
We met on Ezra Cree.
And you took a personal interest in the colonel?
He was not a colonel at the time, only a corporal.
Then I have known Colonel Harris even longer than you have. He was a mere private when we met. He was fresh out of basic and assigned to an awful planet called Gobi. Harris was promoted from private to corporal a few days after I left. Isn't that right, Harris?
I did not say anything. If I could have broken free of the table, I would have happily murdered General Crowley on the spot.
You must feel very special, Colonel Harris. Here you are, a prisoner of war, and an important man like Governor Yamashiro has chosen to come visit you. I would never have guessed you to have such powerful friends. Governor Yamashiro asked you how you knew about our plan to attack Tuscany. I would be interested in hearing your answer as well.
I did not know about it. How could I possibly have known about it? I was in a cell.
But somehow you did. And somehow you managed to communicate that information to the Navy, Colonel. I want to know how. If you do not tell me willingly, I am prepared to force it out of you.
The truth about torture was that it never failed. The victim will always give in. It was only a matter of time. I could have told Yamashiro or Crowley my secret.
I believed Yamashiro when he hinted his intention to protect me and set me free once the war was won. The problem was that his position did not seem so much better than my own.
Governor, Colonel Harris and I have some matters to discuss.
There are the articles?
Articles of agreement stipulating the humane treatment of prisoners, Yoshi. I assure you that Colonel Harris will receive humane treatment. Now, if you would excuse us, my interrogation team should be arriving.
I will speak with you again.
I'll give you one chance. How did you know about the attack on Tuscany?
I didn't.
How did you warn the Navy about the attack?
I did not know about the attack.
I see.
He reached a hand along the side of the table and flipped a switch. There were several video monitors around the table, just at the edge of the light. One down toward my feet showed body readings. Multicolored lines ran across the screen displaying my pulse, my heartbeat, my stress level, and my brain activity. A score in the top right corner of the screen showed a computer-calculated projection of the veracity of everything I said based on those body readings.
Pointless to lie, Harris, you know that. How did you know about the attack? How did you send your message?
I did not know about the attack.
I suppose it is possible that some UA admiral got lucky and happened to station 50 ships around Tuscany, but the monitor reading your vital signs does not seem to believe you.
He stepped out of the room, leaving me alone to think about what might happen to me. They would torture me. And I was going to go through this for what? To protect the nation I hated? To get paid by Huang? To get revenge on the men who killed Kleiber? More likely, I would allow myself to be tortured because of neural programming. I was designed not to back down. And because, despite it all, I wanted to protect the Republic, earn my bounty from Huang, and kill the men who killed Kleiber. But above all, I was going to be tortured because my programming would not let me help the enemy.
The chemical compound in the syringe is not lethal, but having electricity-conducting toxins flowing through your veins is not good for your health. Taken in large quantities, it might cause cancer.
After giving me the injection, the technician left the room and I was alone. My fingers tingled and my palms were covered with sweat. I did not know if anyone had ever tortured or even interrogated a Liberator clone. I looked around as best I could. Everything within that cone of blinding light shining over my table was bleached white by its brightness. Everything beyond the edge of the light was nearly invisible to me, shadows at most. Time continued to pass, slowly. I had no idea how long it was before someone finally came in.
How are we doing?
The man stood over me. His skin looked paper white in the bright overhead light. The thick lenses of his glasses magnified the size of his eyes. He reached into the breast pocket of his white lab coat and produced a long glass tube. This he opened, showing me its contents. The tube was a quiver for 3-inch needles. The man selected one.
This will not hurt.
Smiling kindly, as if to reassure me, the man stabbed the first needle deep into my right bicep.
Don't move. You would not want to break the needle. Then we might have to dig it out.
When he finished, he pulled the needle from my arm, wiped the blood off with a cloth, and examined it under the light.
Good. Good. The needle turns green if the compound has dispersed properly. You're in excellent shape, Colonel Harris. Sometimes the compound bunches up, especially when a patient has bad circulation. With you, it spreads through your upper extremities perfectly.
He placed the needle on the table beside me. I twisted my neck and managed to get a look at it. The shaft of that needle had turned jade green. The man held the tube so that I could see it. He wanted me to know what he was doing. I could tell this by the slow way he selected the next needle and held it up for me.
Now, let's be sure that the compound is spreading through your lower extremities.
Get specked.
Don't take this personally, Colonel Harris. I'm just doing my job. Besides, this is nothing. This is just a small pinprick. Don't get worked up. In a minute, it will all be over, and I assure you, you will forget all about the pin test.
With that, he stabbed the needle deep into the calf of my right leg. The man repeated everything, pulling and cleaning the needle, and then showing me the results.
Excellent. Now, Let's just be sure the compound has dispersed properly throughout.
He selected another needle, then paused.
This one may hurt. I assure you, you will forget about it soon enough.
And he plunged that third needle into my stomach.
Get specs, you goddamn son of a...
There is nothing personal about this.
Oh, yes, there is.
He pulled the bloody needle out of my gut.
You won't believe this, but we created this compound for humane purposes. It lets us communicate pain to your brain without inflicting physical damage. What you will feel is a very amplified version of the damage your body is taking.
Get specked.
I will give you a brief demonstration of pain. Then, perhaps we can discuss the information I am looking for before we proceed much further.
The man held up a harness that reminded me of a bit for a horse. He showed it to me.
Colonel, I suggest that you take this voluntarily. If you don't wear this, you may bite your tongue, and that would not be good for either of us.
Get specked.
Suit yourself.
Then he held up a 5-inch chrome-plated wand. It looked like a fancy pen. There were no wires hanging out of it and no lights built into it. It was just a plain, silvery shaft. He held it a few inches away from my face, giving me an opportunity to take a good look at it.
Generally, we like to start out light, maybe a couple of hundred volts, but since you're a liberator, I think that would be a waste of time.
With this, he ran the wand over the left side of my chest, along my ribs, and down to my navel. For an instant, I felt nothing but the smooth, warm surface of the wand on my skin. That pleasant sensation might have lasted 1/10 of a second. Then the pain shot through me. Then, as suddenly as it started, the pain disappeared.
My, you liberators are tough. Normally my patients start to sob about now. Still, you did mess yourself, that's something. In the old days, they used to kill people with the voltage you just experienced. Did you know that? You just experienced 20 seconds of 2,000 volts. Well, actually it was 10 volts. The wand only has a 10-volt charge, but your neural receptors believed they were taking a 2,000-volt shock. That was the voltage they used to use in electric chairs. They would electrocute the condemned for 30 seconds at 2,000 volts to make them pass out. Then they would drop the voltage and finish the job. Now you know how those old outlaws felt just before they died. The only difference is that this won't kill you. This won't fry your brain or damage your vital organs, so we can keep you riding the lightning for a much longer time. The only thing we have to worry about is having a fear-induced heart attack. Judging by your readings, Colonel Harris, I don't think that will be a problem. So, think you could hang on to your sanity through a 10-minute jolt? The first time I tried this procedure, I killed the man. The guy died, my fault entirely. I had him on a table just like this one, only it had electric restraints. It was just a little shock, just a disabling shock. It shouldn't have hurt the guy at all, but, you know, with the compound increasing the voltage... Anyway, the restraints had a 200-volt charge, so he got the equivalent of 40,000 volts non-stop. His heart burst. I don't know if that would happen to you. This is such an excellent opportunity. I never imagined I could ever work with a clone of your make. You have no idea what an amazing specimen you are, and to think they can mass-produce you. So, let's talk about the information I need, Colonel Harris. Should I call you Wason? Can I call you Wason? I suppose at this point I can call you anything I want. Just don't pull out my magic wand. Is that what you were thinking, Wason?
Get specked.
So, Wason, I'm going to ask you some questions. Whether you answer or not, I'm going to give you another jolt. One of the things they teach us in intelligence training is never accept the first offer. So, you tell me as much or as little as you want, and I'll still fry you after that. Then, I will ask you the same questions again. And we'll keep that up until I think you've told me the truth. All of the truth. Tell me, Wason, how did you know that we were going to attack Tuscany?
Didn't know about Tuscany.
Out came the wand. He placed it on the table beside my arm.
Wason, you cannot possibly expect anyone to believe that.
I suppose if you didn't know about the attack, the next question makes no sense. Still, you must be in contact with someone, Wason. A bright man like you would not come out to the enemy fleet without telling somebody. Oh.
He took the harness in his hands. There was a plastic bar in the middle of the harness. This he slipped into my mouth, pinning my tongue in place behind my teeth. He laced the harness around my face, then cinched it to the strap across my forehead.
Is there another spy on this ship? Nothing to say for yourself.
He picked up the wand and touched it to my throat, just below the corner of my jaw. From my throat, he moved the wand to my heart. Then the wand moved down across the flat of my stomach. Had I been cognizant, I would have worried about the man dragging that wand across my genitals. But he paused over my lower abdominal muscles, and then he placed the wand back on the table.
Wason, you just survived 3 minutes and 22 seconds of 2,000 volts. If you were truly riding the lightning in an old-fashioned electric chair, your eyes would have melted and your hair would have caught on fire. Do you still say that you've never heard of Tuscany?
The man removed the harness from my mouth.
I did not know about Tuscany.
Is there another spy on this ship?
I don't know.
You know what, Harris? I think I believe you.
Between the initial beating I received from Sam the jailer and the time that I woke up again inside my cell, nearly 24 hours had passed. The ringing in my head was the worst I had ever felt, but my body did not hurt too badly. During the time I was being interrogated, I caught a lucky break. The Confederate Arms sent 10 ships to Odessa, a wealthy planet in the Sagittarius arm that supported the revolution. They did not intend to attack the planet. This was a blockade-running mission. A flotilla of UA Navy destroyers and fighter carriers met them as they emerged. The Confederate ships tried to escape without engaging the Sagittarius fleet. The UA ships followed. 2 Hinode battleships were destroyed. The others fled until they could broadcast to safety. Since I was deep in the bowels of the ship, stripped to my briefs and strapped to an interrogation table when the battle occurred, Crowley must have decided that I had nothing to do with it. The Confederate Arms said there was a leak in the chain of command and blamed the Mogats. The Mogats said that the Japanese should have been better prepared for the battle. I personally wanted all sides to blame Tom Halverson. With any luck, they might even shoot the bastard and me with the same firing squad.
I have a gift for you, Colonel Harris. This is a gentleman's gift. No one else needs to know that I gave it to you.
Yamashiro stood right in front of my cell, leaning forward into the bars. He held onto the bars with his right hand and reached toward me with his left. That hand was cupped around something, my gentleman's gift. I sat up and stared through the bars at the man. Our eyes met for a moment, then he nodded down toward the gift he had offered me. I stood and approached.
You're not supposed to stand so close to the bars. It's dangerous. A prisoner could grab your arm and pin you against the bars.
I'm not worried about it.
As I drew closer and looked at his offered hand, I noticed the calloused skin along the edge of it. A short and powerful build, sandpaper hands. These were the signs of training in judo or jiu-jitsu. Yamashiro turned his hand so that the palm faced up. His fingers still curled over the gift, hiding it. As I approached, the fingers spread, revealing their secret. I saw nuggets of glass and wadded up wires that looked like they were made of gold.
It was a fine magic trick.
Seconds passed as I stared at that hand filled with sparkling gems of broken glass, my heart sinking in my chest. Then I realized that the pulverized Media Link shades he held had gold frames. The ones I left on the bridge had cheap black plastic frames.
A young ensign found them in a communication station on the bridge.
And you have one more spy on your hands. I've never seen those before.
No? The shades you left had black frames. These were the best I could do on short notice.
Were the real ones?
Right where you left them. I thought they might be more valuable just as you left them, having unseen ears can be a powerful tool.
Who did your ensign tell about the Shades?
He told his commanding officer, who told his commanding officer.
And it went all the way to the top?
Yes.
But Admiral Halverson did not hear about it?
He's with the Confederate Arms Fleet. The ensign was an officer in the Hinoday Fleet. The information came to me.
And you don't share intelligence between fleets?
Sadly, no. Like you, we also suspect that our allies in the Confederate Arms may not be reliable.
I see. In my opinion, the Mogats aren't much better. You know how they got these ships in the first place? They gassed the original crew.
So, you would not trust them?
If I were you, you mean? I would trust the Arms before I would trust the Mogats. You know who you should have trusted? You should have trusted Kleiber. Kleiber did not want to invade your planet. He tried to keep the Senate off your back as much as possible.
I admired Admiral Kleiber, but I did not trust the Senate.
The Mogats would not have known how to rig Kleiber's ship like that.
Kleiber was an honorable man. I did not want him killed.
But you showed them how to do it.
Yes. A Hinoday engineer figured out how to sabotage the generators and taught some of their engineers.
Did you know what they would do with it?
Yes.
Is it irony or karma? Now that they know how to sabotage broadcast engines, what makes you think that they won't do it to you?
The Believers could barely fly these ships when they helped us escape Ezra Cree. They had no idea how to maintain or repair them. We renovated the fleet. Our engineers did all of it.
The Mogats learn quickly, so watch your back. Once they know enough, they won't need you or your fleet officers. As I recall, you're a student of history. Right now, your officers are playing the role of Poland to the Confederate Arms Soviet Union and the Mogats Nazi Germany. The Nazis and the Soviets had a shaky alliance. It ended the moment they both invaded Poland to try and get a better shot at each other. Once your war with the Unified Authority is done, you'd better have an exit plan.
One way or another, the war ends tomorrow. We're attacking Earth.